98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Fitz Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata. This is the greatest
show. Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world.
And off we go. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin. After a very busy day in the Valley that gave us a couple of real disappointing teams and a Suns team that just blew up in a good way. They were bad, Jarrett. They were just bad. Hi, Vinny.
What's up, Beck? Jarrett, how are you?
I'm bad, Daddy-O. Yeah.
All right, before we get into all of this, and I know we have very little time to waste today, one of the interesting things of all of us collectively living through this pandemic is we're going to watch the world change in front of us in a lot of different ways. I don't know if you have seen this, but a lot of famous clothiers, a lot of suit makers are filing for bankruptcy and going out of business because there's no market for dress clothes anymore. And it's happening, and people are wondering if it's ever going to come back. I read a story this morning. There is a warehouse in Dallas full of airline peanuts that have nowhere to go.
It's crazy when you think about all the different walks of life that are affected by this.
Yeah.
But is this a push for a more casual United States of America moving forward?
It could be. I mean,
I read a whole story on ESPN. I think it was Zach Lowe put together a piece, and coaches in the NBA sharing their thoughts on whether or not they like the casual look. Because some of them take their wardrobes very seriously.
Yeah. And
I have worn a shirt with a collar one time since March, Bick.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've worn shorts every day to work for basically months now.
And you do that anyway, though.
No,
that's not because of the pandemic.
You think so?
Not every day.
I've dialed it down.
For the summer, though, I mean, that's not because of the pandemic.
But I think, what's happening is, because I've read corresponding stories about this, business meetings, obviously, way down in their frequency and how long they last.
Uh-huh.
So maybe those never come back. Those are colossal time wasters in the past, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who doesn't miss? I mean, does anybody really miss those meetings when just when you think it's over, somebody asks that inane question? You're there another 15 minutes.
The very end of it was like, well, now we'll take questions from anybody.
Yeah, right, right.
Everyone's just like, look, gives the dead eye to each other. Like, you better not close your mouth, son of a.
Right. That's exactly right. So, I mean, think of all the great tie makers and dress shirts makers and suit makers.
Yeah.
It's a casual new era. And if you want airline peanuts, there's a company that's got 87,000 pounds of them sitting in surplus.
Wow. Are they honey roasted?
They're a mix, Jared,
roasted
and salted cashews, pistachios, pecans, and almonds. So as I was reading the story, I kind of went down a rabbit hole, and there was a very funny website that kind of listed the most inane complaints that airline passengers used to have during good times. And they have complaints on log of people complaining that their mix of hot nuts weren't properly balanced.
I'm sorry, was that? Yeah.
Excuse me, flight attendant.
Right, there's not
the
enough.
The mix of my hot nuts is not balanced.
I'm not kidding you, dude. There are complaints on log about this. Hey, look, man, there's not enough pistachios in here, man. It's all walnuts. What's up with this?
Can I get a cashew in aisle 4? cashew.
Right, right. Now you can't get anything.
You're a honey roasted guy, Jarrett?
I don't love nuts, so I like stuff that, you know, adds a different flavor to it.
I discovered something that was right up my alley. It is the salt and vinegar almonds. You found your wasabi almonds, Vinny.
Wasabi I found my and salt soy and sauce.
I found my salt and vinegar.
I haven't tried those yet. I'd be willing to try,
yeah.
But I can't. I mean, between the Southwest flavored Dots pretzels and the wasabi and soy sauce almonds, like those are like,
listen,
those are ranked one and two on the all time snack ranking.
You were so right about those Dots pretzels. I have not found the Southwest variety yet.
It will change your life.
I mean, just the regular brand is mind-blowingly good.
Yes.
All right. All right, Carlin, you
now
ready
we
to
get all the important stuff?
Yeah, we
out
did. You ready to get this train wreck started? Let's go, Jarrett. Come on, Garrett.
The splash, splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The splash.
We start the splash today for Wednesday, August 5th, 2020, with three words: Devin freaking Booker.
Rebound Zubats. He loses it. Suns get it back to Rubio. Time. 6 seconds left in the game. Out to Booker. 5 seconds. 4 seconds. Booker on the drive. Goes up. Here's the shot. Shoot! He got it. And the Suns win the game. Devin Booker at the buzzer. Puts it up and puts it in. Oh, brother. Dee Booker.
That was the scene in Orlando yesterday. You're going to be hearing different versions of that call all day long because I'm going to play them over and over again.
It was truly a phenomenal moment, not just for him and not just for the basketball team, but here in the Valley, there were so many people tuned into the game, so many people wanting to believe they could win that game, and then to get that shot, that felt that was a feeling collectively we have not had in a long time.
No, and we've seen Devin Booker, like, the thesis statement here, Bick, is this is not new for Devin Booker. Right before we went on the air, I watched like a 5-minute montage of all the big game-winning shots he's hit. This was different, though. There was more eyeballs on this one, despite the fact that it was in the middle of the day. This, you know, was identified by us and many others as the first really meaningful game in Devin Booker's career at the end of the season,
exactly.
And that's what he does.
That's exactly, and that is part of what makes this so darn exciting. He had to create that shot out of nowhere, and to do it and hit it pure the way he did.
He got fouled, too.
Yeah, no, he did. He did. It was phenomenal.
They also took out
a good Clippers team, and man, oh man, was that exciting.
Yeah, it was great. 3-0 now, the Suns, after 35 from Booker, who had 6 of 9 from three-point range. They are a game and a half behind ninth-seeded Portland. They got a big win last night, the Blazers did. They beat Houston. One time I root for the Rockets, they can't deliver. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I know.
But things are getting interesting.
The odds are
still long. There's still a lot of work to be done, and there's still a lot of help that the Suns need. But, man, they're in this thing, and it's pretty phenomenal to watch.
The win over the Clippers is the heaviest lift of the bunch. So everything they've got coming up, they can do. They can beat every team that is in front of them. There's going to be some more tough games, but the hardest ask was yesterday's, and they pulled that off. And it should fill them with so much confidence and so much desire. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about this from a lot of different angles because this is cool. I didn't expect this. I wanted this. I didn't expect this.
The team in the eighth seed, the Memphis Grizzlies, they're perilously hanging on to the eighth seed.
Suffered an injury.
0-3, and now they're without Jaren Jackson Jr., who had been playing his best basketball in Orlando, averaging over 25 points in those three games. But he's got a torn meniscus, or as we call it on this show, a Bickley injury. And he's out for the year. And it's a terrible loss. I'm not sitting here applauding the fact that a player got hurt. It's terrible for the Grizzlies, who are now really up against it. But, you know, even before this happened, on yesterday's show, we were talking about how the Grizzlies were just opening the door for everybody behind them. And this is really, really a horrible development for their chances.
To me it has changed everything because I think the goal going in for teams was the mindset that if we can get to the number 9 seed, we're going to get a chance to play two games, both of them must win against an 8 seed. Mm-hmm. So that seemed to be the goal. That 8 seed might be up for grabs. And if some team can come from behind and get the 8 seed and only have to win one of two games against the play-in team, that's a huge advantage. And I don't know how Memphis is going to handle this, but this is a huge loss for them.
Absolutely. And people were assuming, Memphis will take on that 9 seed if they're within four games. Memphis might not be 8 or 9 when it's all said and done. That's how tight things are.
Yeah.
The Arizona Coyotes find themselves even at a game apiece in their best-of-5 qualifying series with Nashville. Preds took game 2 yesterday 4-2. 4-0, but Clayton Keller and Lawson Crouse scored 9 seconds apart in the final minute to make it look a little bit better on the score sheet. A not-so-promising note from yesterday's game. Backup goalie Antti Raanta took a shot off the mask in warm-ups, left the bench in the second period, was replaced by third-stringer Aiden Hill. Another game today, the rare playoff back-to-back. It makes the whole goalie situation murky. Darcy Kuemper wasn't great yesterday either, but no matter. Pivotal Game 3 faces off today in Edmonton, 11:30 between the Coyotes and the Predators.
And Antti Raanta, he puts up great numbers when he's healthy, but man, does he miss a lot of time for a lot of different reasons. Yeah, I've seen the video of him taking that shot off the face mask, and he skated off the ice, and he was laughing, and he looked okay. Now, that doesn't mean that he didn't suffer a concussion and get some bad headaches later, which is clearly must have been what happened, but
that's
just
why
disappointing.
That's why he was unfit to play.
Right.
Maybe the worst terminology the NHL's ever come up with. If you were wondering if a day off would help the Arizona Diamondbacks, wonder no more. It didn't. Jose Altuve of the Astros set the tone, clubbed a solo home run off of Madison Bumgarner in the top of the first inning. Astros went on to win 8-2. Bumgarner allowed 8 runs, 7 earned, and 4 1/3 innings, took the loss. The bats were quiet again, just 7 hits, no home runs. And they scored their second run on a bases-loaded walk when they were down 8-1. Torrey Lovello made all kinds of substitutions in the sixth inning, claims he wasn't sending a message, instead getting some rest for starters going into game two of the series tonight, which will pit Robbie Ray against Lance McCullers. 6:10 first pitch, 5:30 pregame here on the 87.
Yeah, he subbed out 5 guys, and it was a very dramatic move, and he did it fairly early on in the game. And it's to say that he wasn't sending a message, I don't know why he doesn't just cop to that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it was a pretty strong message he was sending. The baseball team has just been they are just a hot mess right now,
which is shocking when you consider the amount of faith the Diamondbacks fan base has in Torrey Lovello, this roster, and the front office.
Yeah.
Mike Hazen was on with Doug and Wolf, and he said, we got no excuses, so we'll hear a lot from him today as well. Phoenix Mercury reeled off their third straight win in the WNBA bubble. They beat Atlanta 81-74. Diana Taurasi, 20 points. Brittany Griner added 18. Mercury will take on Chicago tomorrow. And the UConn Huskies became the first Division I college football team to opt out of the 2020 season over coronavirus concerns. Their athletic director, David Benedict, said in a news release, quote, after receiving guidance from state and public health officials and consulting with football student athletes, we've decided that we will not compete on the gridiron this season. Mm. The safety challenges created by COVID-19 place our football student athletes at an unacceptable level of risk. Now, it is fair to note that UConn left their conference officially last month. They were expected to play this season as an independent, and there would have been all kinds of scheduling difficulties to try to build a schedule with most conferences going league only for 2020, mm-hmm. So I think that factored into it as well.
Yeah, but
this is not a good thing for college football.
No, it's not. There are a lot of people that think that eventually this is going to be all about the Power Five basically seceding from the NCAA. Everything in college sports seems to be pointing in that direction. Mm-hmm. We'll see where this all ends up. This is their landscape's going to change more than any.
Yeah, there's your splash for August 5th. Coming up next, we get more into Devin Booker's heroics and the promising performance in Orlando of the Phoenix Suns. That's straight ahead. Bickley and Murata on this Wednesday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
They bring the double at Booker. Book on the spin. Fires for the win! Got it!
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know, now you do. He is ridiculous. Okay?
Kevin Ray, Eddie Johnson on the final call. Fox Sports Arizona yesterday. Book's heroics lifting the Suns to a 117-115 win over the LA Clippers. It was not a one-man show. Contributions all around, even in that last possession, Bick. Mikal Bridges, we talked about it on yesterday's show, still impacting the game defensively, and there was a rough stretch defensively for Mikal Bridges when Kawhi Leonard said, I'm not losing this game, and started to take over in the fourth quarter. And that's a tough guard, because when Kawhi is dialed in, he's one of the best. But just to get a hand on an outlet pass, the Clippers are going to have the last shot. He deflects it to Ayton. He gets it to Rubio, and immediately Ricky Rubio is like, win the game, Book. And that's exactly what he did. Now, Eddie Johnson just laughing as part of the analysis, I loved it.
Yeah, it was
there was a lot of people doing that. This is the call from the Clippers television broadcast. You'll notice a similarity here.
The outlet away, and the Suns have it. Six to play. Booker, this is for the win. Got it! Wow!
What a shot by Devin Booker right there. Unbelievable play. But again, that's what the great players do. They find a way.
Just the laughter as part of the analysis.
I know
you're good and you did something significant when you're just making people shake their head and laugh.
Well, the degree of difficulty when they were just running defenders at Devin Booker over the last 2 minutes of that game, there are so many different angles I want to get into today, but we can start right there with that shot. That is Devin Booker's finest moment as an NBA player. It even exceeds, in my mind, the 70 points in Boston Garden because of the stakes and what it meant and what was on the line and who the opponent was. And the fact that there was a spotlight on this basketball team yesterday in the context that this game was going to be a litmus test, a test of who was ready for this, who's ready to be part of the next playoff basketball team in Phoenix. And Devin Booker showed that he is ready to be that kind of guy. Eddie Johnson, I thought, down the stretch, Eddie was great. He had his vibe just right, and he was calling on Devin Booker late in the game. Devin, you don't pass the ball. You're the star. These are the games now where the last few minutes you take every shot. And that kind of came to fruition. I, like you, thought Eddie Johnson laughing was one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my life. It was the most unique game-winning color commentator reaction you'll ever find.
Yeah, and it was featured on SportsCenter this morning. The 6 o'clock SportsCenter, when I woke up, turned on the television. The first story, the Phoenix Suns.
Wow.
They had a stat, too, about Devin Booker. That was his fourth buzzer-beater game winner in a game where he had 30-plus. I mean, he was on the list with guys like Jordan and Bird, one behind those guys. He's 23 years old. Here's Devin Booker after the game walking through the shot and what went into it.
I mean, that's a big confidence booster. We wanted to get the last shot, though. You know, after we got the steal in the ball of 10 seconds, I just wanted to make sure I took the last shot, giving them no time on the other end. And that's what happened. I knew the double team was coming, so I attacked the opposite way. There's a lot of length over there with Kawhi, so pump fake, got him in the air, and fade away shot.
Fade away, there was contact made. Booker goes down, watches the shot go through on his back, and just lays down as his teammates mob him.
Yeah.
He was asked also, what are you thinking when you're laying on the floor after that?
I'm not a big celebration guy. If you've seen me in the past when I hit a big shot, but they caught me on the ground, so I couldn't get away from them. Usually in the past when I hit a big shot, you know, I just want to move on to the next game and get off the court. But they caught me while I was down. You know, but the energy these guys bring, you know, the guys are in the game, the guys are on the bench. Kelly's out here going crazy every game, bringing the energy. So, you know, it's a fun team to be a part of, man. We're having fun with it. And this whole experience, just being here in the bubble, you know, we want to come down here and make some noise. And that's what we're doing.
To this point, the very least is that you can say about the Suns is they have been given an opportunity and they are taking the opportunity to get better as a basketball team.
Yeah.
But now, with everything that's gone on with their good play and, you know, things that have unfolded in front of them, now we're talking about an actual chance at cracking the postseason party, which I did not think was remotely possible before this started.
Well, listen, and I think it is. The Suns have games remaining against the Pacers, who are a good team. They're also unbeaten. The Heat, the Thunder, the 76ers, and the Mavericks. You can win all of those games. If you can beat the Clippers the way you just did, then you can handle T.J. Warren and his 39.7 points per game.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all he's averaging. But these games that are in front of them, you're like, okay, if they can actually string this together, they can maybe pull this off. You look at the teams that they have to catch. They still need some help, but it's starting to line up where they have actually a couple more combinations here of wins and timely losses by other teams. Suns might even have their destiny in their own hands if they can run the table. Now, that's a hard ask of anybody, but that's what makes this so brilliant. It has got, as our guy Rod Lakin told me earlier, he is right on about this. It's got an NCAA tournament feel to this where it's win or go home for the Suns. It's like they don't win that game yesterday, then you can kind of pull the plug on all this. Now, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it feels like that. And to see the team respond under that kind of situation, it's liberating. And to see the reaction on social media yesterday, there were a lot of people engaged with a basketball game going down in the middle of the afternoon. And the reaction to this, I think, showed just how much this market needs and wants something like this from the Phoenix Suns. And the fact that we identified this as a market, as a big basketball game, a meaningful game that we haven't seen in about 6 years, and for the Suns to respond with that, or more to the point, for Devin Booker to respond with that, it's great. Devin Booker, you look across now from national websites to NBA players on Twitter, he's the biggest thing in the bubble right now. There's a lot of good stories, guys who are kind of lifting up and elevating, nothing like what's happening with Devin Booker. He is becoming a superstar before our very eyes, and it's being echoed by a lot of different websites, people on social media, and the like. It's all happening for him right now, and this is what he's always wanted. And my number one takeaway was, this is everything that I used to think about Devin Booker when I would see him in these moments that were the rare big games for the Phoenix Suns, and Booker played very few of them. And along the way, people actually blamed him for not lifting up the Phoenix Suns. Oh, he's not a winning player. He's just a statistic accumulator. Yeah, it's kind of not like that.
Well, that faction of people has not completely disappeared.
Well,
it's getting
idiots.
A lot smaller by the day. And, you know, this is what Suns fans have been standing up and yelling for about the past three seasons. You know, we got the 70-point game in Booker's second year, and there was a healthy debate on the validity of that. And I understand, you know, 70 points is 70 points as I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, such very, very small group of players have ever done that. But the way they got it was a little strange. So there was a healthy debate. There's not a healthy debate anymore. This is a one-sided debate. Devin Booker is a superstar in this league.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And yesterday confirmed that, because that is the shot that superstars make. You make it against double teams. You make it double pumping over Craig Elo. You make it, you know, any number of shots that Kobe has made over the time. This is the ultimate currency in the NBA. Even more to me than championship rings is how many times you as a player did what Devin Booker did yesterday. Won a game at the buzzer on command, on demand. That's what the great players do.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is the highest level of individual basketball, and basketball is the most individual of sports in that framework. It's a stars league, and that's what he did. He created that on demand yesterday, and it's fascinating.
And,
it's a whole new world.
For once, the universe aligned, because it looked like their last shot was going to be Ricky Rubio missing the shot, and Devin Booker not even getting the chance, and then perhaps blowing the game, and then everything, you know, worked out that they got the win.
There's some risk involved here going forward, because DeAndre Ayton might drive me positively insane by the end of all this.
I read that in your column today, I actually laughed out loud when I read that line.
Well, and because now they're playing such high leverage games that mistakes and lapses and stuff like everything is now really important. Everything. And he has got to get more involved, and he can't be letting guys go by him, and he has just got to seize this moment a little better. We know he has it in him. It just can't be repeated.
I thought he was decent yesterday.
And he was decent. His stat line was okay, but there was that moment down the stretch when Devin Booker came out of the game that he has got to want the ball. He has got to take over the game in situations like that if we want this team to do what we want them to do. And he's got it in him.
But there's still that matter of getting the ball to him. There's four other guys on the floor, and he's not going to create his own shot.
Well, so Ricky Rubio right now is their number two option. And Ricky's got a lot of big game experience, and I take comfort in his presence on the court in these high leverage games. They're not too big for him. The rest of that Suns team has got to make sure that these games they're playing now, they're not too big for him.
Yeah. Suns in Indiana tomorrow's Phoenix looks to go 4-0 in the bubble. We'll talk to Tom Chambers later on, and Cameron Payne scheduled to join us from Orlando as well on this Suns heavy show. We go from the elation of the Suns win to the depths of the D-backs loss. Next, it's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
He swings and he hits one to deep left. Back on it goes Varsho, and on two pitches, it's 1-0 in favor of the Astros. Altuve has hit his second home run of the year. That one deep into the bleachers in left center.
I don't know. I just wasn't very good, to put it bluntly. Just seemed like I couldn't get anything going for us, and that can't happen, especially in a season like this one. But you know, the one that's going to wear on me the most was the throwing error more than any of the pitching stuff, because we're out of the inning right there. And that's tough. I can make that play 100 more times and not make a bad throw, and unfortunately, I did today.
Yeah. Jose Altuve starting things off in the first. Greg Schulte on the call. Madison Bumgarner not good last night. 4 1/3, 7 earned runs, 8 total. Did make that throwing error that could have got them out of an inning. It's just like Murphy's Law right now. Anything that can go wrong for the Diamondbacks is going wrong.
Well, everything that Madison Bumgarner had to give this team yesterday, he was not capable of giving to them. So it started there, just like it's started in the past in recent games where the other team is jumping on the Diamondbacks starting pitcher. Last night, it was the second pitch of the game. Jose Altuve goes down, gets the ball, puts it out left field. You get out of that. Then Carlos Correa leads off the second with a home run that was just a meatball over the middle of the plate. Mm-hmm. And then came that fifth inning that included that throwing error that kind of really just blew everything off the rails. It's so unbecoming of everything about this team when none of it is working and the manager is making dramatic gestures mid-game for what purpose. And because it's not like he's got that good of a bench, and it's not like he's replacing these really good players with really good replacements. A lot of these at bats are going to rookies and young kids, and it's like, what exactly is going on here? You can tell last night Starling Marte didn't put together a real good at bat, and I think there's a lot of that going on. I'm sure the manager is not happy with the approach that they're not linking at bats together like he likes to say.
Sure.
I think there's a lot of that stuff going on. So I think to me it looked apparent that he did indeed send a message, which is why I didn't know why he felt compelled to say otherwise after the game.
Yeah. 8-1 was the score, top of the sixth. Steven Vogt, Andy Young, Jake Lamb, Tim LaCastro, John Jay in, Starling Marte, Eduardo Escobar, Christian Walker, Ketel Marte, Cole Calhoun out. That's the heart of the Diamondbacks order. Even though this team is not hitting at all right now, those five guys probably represent your best chance to climb back into a ballgame. So why the change? Torrey Lovello asked about it. Was that a message being sent to your quote-unquote offensive leaders?
No. I don't send messages like that. I'll send messages directly face-to-face with guys and have those conversations. I just wanted to get some of our guys have been going every day a little bit more rest, get them off of their feet. So definitely wasn't the intent to send any type of message. I just wanted to maybe live to fight another day, let them watch some baseball, let the understudies get some at-bats, some meaningful at-bats. A couple of them are going to be playing tomorrow, and I just didn't want guys to get stale. So that was my way of accomplishing two things, getting the right guys the rest and getting the understudies a couple at-bats, get their at-bats tuned up.
There's so many reasons why that doesn't jive with most people.
Mm-hmm.
A, you're coming off of an off day.
Yeah, that's the big thing.
You're 11 games into a season.
That's another big
thing.
And
C, you only have 49 games left.
Yeah.
That's just flies in the face of everything we've heard about urgency.
What
and
this
maybe
does,
Tori Lavello just doesn't want to come out and say, yeah, that was a message, because he'd rather keep that behind closed doors. And maybe he did have those talks face-to-face, in his words, with those players. And he's just, you know, he's a stand-up guy, and maybe he doesn't want to put that much pressure on his players.
I think it's a game that he's playing, Vinny. I think what you do as a talent manager in times of extreme distress like this, I think what he is doing is he sent a very dramatic gesture to this team and this lineup en masse in the midst of this game, but then he went and protected them to the media. So now he can, as manager, look these guys in the face and say, I didn't throw you under the bus. I did what I had to do, but I covered for you with the media. The next step is to call them out. The next step is to let the anger go, but it does come off as disingenuous. But I think it's a game that Tori Lavello is playing with this team, so no matter how mad a David Peralta gets for being pinch hit for, and no matter how angry this group of starters that got pulled out mid-game yesterday after a day off when maybe you need the at-bats to get grooved, that this is his way of saying, but I didn't throw you into the bus.
The problem is the guys on the bench are not doing well either. So it's not like they're giving the team a spark. No. And you can't really afford in such a short season to, you know, take games off where you're trying to make statements and
well, look, the really bad look to me is that everything about the season was defined by the fact that can you start fast? Can you get into a sprinter's stance and go? And every team prepared for that being their goal, and the Diamondbacks have failed more than most every other team in Major League Baseball at looking like a team ready to go. And it's everywhere. It's the starting pitching. It's the defense. It's the hitting. It's been the bullpen hasn't been great. And there's just been a lot of creeping desperation hidden by the words of the manager, who is trying to keep everything calm in a public setting.
And lifelessness, too.
Yeah.
General manager Mike Hazen was on with Doug and Wolf this morning and was asked the question, you know, do you support, if Torrey's going to bench players, do you support that?
We watched these games. I don't think it was a benching. I think it was, we're down 8-1 and, you know, we are in the midst of a 60-game season that we are playing guys pretty regularly, and I think he genuinely wanted to get guys off their feet. You know, if the manager is sending messages in various subtle ways, I don't have a problem with it. I think, look, if we weren't expected to win, or to Doug's question earlier, if the expectation going into the season were different, then yeah, I might have a different take. We might have different conversations around, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. That's not what our expectation was.
Yeah, and about expectations and another EX word, excuses, what are they?
But we are not hitting. We are not scoring runs. We are not executing at the level we need to execute. There's nobody that's happy with what's happened. This is not the team that we, you know, the results from a team that we put on the field necessarily. And we have no excuses. We don't have one person that is injured. We have not been impacted by the virus. There are no excuses. We have played poorly.
Yeah, I mean, the Miami Marlins last night got the go-ahead to play. They put 17 players on the injured list before the game and were having introductions to their new teammates who didn't know each other. They went out and won a baseball game.
Yeah.
11 games this season for the lack of offense. The Diamondbacks have not had double digits in hits. Dating back to last year, that is 15 straight games without double-digit hits. That is the longest streak in Diamondbacks history.
Wow.
Here was Tori Lavello on the lack of offense.
Offensively, I think we built some innings late. We had some situations where we loaded the bases. We started to compress the baseball and really make some solid contact. And obviously the day was highlighted by Andy Young getting his first two hits, so it was an exciting moment for all of us.
And I do agree, and Tori said, you know, we made some solid contact, we're just hitting it right at people, and I did see that. Maybe that's the first step in the right direction is, you know, we talked earlier this week, Bic, about even the lack of solid contact for this team and how quiet the outs were and the exit velocity not being there. There was a little uptick in that, but, you know, that's you got to dig deep for that silver lining in a six-run loss.
Oh, yeah. No, it in another non-competitive baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's in, and I don't know where you go from here. I mean, you talk about off to a bad start. I mean, it's almost over.
We do this every few games because of the shortened season. After today's game, 1/5 of the season is gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy that they are becoming the poster boys of everything you were not allowed to do this year.
Yeah.
And they are clearly the most disappointing team in baseball so far.
Maybe they just need a team bonding trip to the casino or something.
Oh. Right.
Robbie Ray against Lance McCullers in game 2 of that series tonight, 6:10 first pitch, 5:30 pregame here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Coming up, the Suns got a big win yesterday on a big stage. Can the Coyotes do the same thing? We'll find out shortly, but it'll be uphill. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Bickley and Murata.
Yeah, about 45 minutes away from faceoff in Edmonton. Game 3, Nashville and the Arizona Coyotes in their best of 5 qualifying series. We saw the opposite performance that we saw in Game 1 from the Coyotes yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They lose 4-2, a game that was 4-0 in the last minute, and then 2 quick goals, one by Keller, one by Krause, made it look respectable. But much different looking, in some ways, performance by the Coyotes. We had talked on Monday, Bic, about that game on Sunday. One of the keys was the amount of block shots, and those were way down, only 10 block shots. Darcy Kuemper wasn't sharp. They gave up the quick goals, fell behind 2-0 in the first period, and even the shots on goal at that point kind of waned until the last minute of the game.
Oh, yeah.
But the bigger question now is, if Rick Tocchet, as head coach, going into a rare playoff back-to-back, had any wiggle room or flexibility with the goalie position, he doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
Because Antti Raanta got hurt in warm-ups yesterday, and Aiden Hill's the backup. And I don't care how Darcy Kuemper is feeling right now, you can't throw Aiden Hill, who has been good when he's been called upon in the regular season.
Right,
you can't throw him into a playoff.
You cannot do that. I'm completely down with that. And I'm trying to kind of get to the bottom of exactly what this means. I'm certainly not trying to diminish what might have happened to Antti Raanta, but it is just crazy how unable he has been to stay available for the Coyotes. It's crazy.
Let's talk about both goalies. That's been the story of their season. When their goalies went down and Raanta went down after Kuemper got hurt, they were in first place in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Had they had their normal goalie rotation all season, they might be in the round robin right now and not playing a qualifying series.
Yeah,
they would have held on this season for them.
Yes, had they stayed healthy, they would have been able to, I think, maybe retain their position inside the hierarchy of the Western Conference and not have it all kind of slip away like they did. And it's a shame because Antti Raanta, when he's healthy, is terrific.
Yeah.
But he just cannot stay available. So now it brings up a couple of things. One, does it add pressure on this team? Does it add pressure to Darcy Kuemper? Does it make him better? I don't think, given the outcome of yesterday's game, Rick Tocchet would have gone to Antti Raanta today had he been healthy. I don't think that would have been the case. I think if you're a 1-1, you've got to ride with Darcy Kuemper. I think had they won yesterday's game, maybe they came back with Antti Raanta today. But I don't think that, given the outcome yesterday, you can roll with Antti now, even if he is fit to play, which we don't know.
Unfit. Come on.
Right. Fit or unfit?
Oh,
all right, there
he's
you go.
Unfit. She's unfit. Not a fit.
Andy Reid.
Yes.
Right.
Andy Reid, oof, mustache and unfit.
Right. Right.
Darcy Kuemper was limited in his availability this year, played 29 games in the regular season, did not play on back-to-back days in any of those 29. The last time he played back-to-back days was in March of 2019, March 23rd. In a game at New Jersey, they lost in a shootout. The next day against the Islanders, they lost in regulation time. And obviously the stakes are much higher now because this is a postseason game. No matter how you slice it, Bick,
Yeah.
This is the biggest Coyotes hockey game in 8 years. I mean,
yeah,
we're just talking about the Suns playing a meaningful game late in the season. This is it. I mean, this is the pivotal game three.
Well, look at these two games. I mean, game one, the Coyotes jumped all over Nashville in the first period. Game two, Nashville jumps all over the Coyotes. We have not had a hockey game yet.
It's true. I mean,
game one, the last.
Things got a little hairy in the last 10 minutes of that game.
Of game one. They did, indeed. Yeah. But a lot of that game was but
very little in terms of intrigue yesterday.
Right, but the idea where you have to prevail as a hockey team in the playoffs, you have got to have the fortitude and the sturdiness to just play shift after shift after shift of really no margin for error hockey, and if you don't do it, you're going to get exposed, and it's kind of happened on reverse to both teams. And. And I think what you're seeing is it's the emotion of the moment. It's even though there's nobody in the stands, Nashville yesterday when they got that second goal off the turnover, now they were skating downhill. And as a hockey team, you hate to be in that position otherwise, because then you start thinking of things that I talked about yesterday. Do you pull your goalie and just give him time to wash this off? And they Coyotes obviously didn't have that opportunity yesterday, but this is it's an enormous game now. It's pivotal, obviously. Game three in a best of five series, it's huge.
Well, again, the difference in nature of the first two games, everybody was so impressed with the, you know, turn on the intensity, it's playoff hockey, even though you're, you know, in an empty arena in Edmonton and there's nobody in it. They were able to do that in game one. Yesterday was just flat from the just looking at the numbers, and, you know, watching the game while we were on the air a little bit. They got killed in the faceoff circle. Their power play didn't generate anything. Like I said, the block shots and the hits were down from game one. I'm very curious to see what kind of effect, though. You know, there wasn't a lot of intensity in that last minute, but to get goals 9 seconds apart for Keller and Kraus, does that have any effect on the offense? Does that give them any jump today? I don't know, because there wasn't a whole lot of resistance being put up by Nashville
point. No, you're exactly right. So this is just going to be one of those kind of defining games in this season. We've been waiting for the Coyotes to give us something to kind of wash away all the bad that's happened to them down the stretch. Because at one point in time, they were right near the top of the Western Conference. And that wasn't that long ago.
And let somebody have their Devin Booker moment today for the Coyotes. How about that?
Yeah.
Step up and become the star in the biggest game of the year.
We've already seen one buzzer beater goal in the bubble so far. Why not another one today?
Yes. Taylor Hall. Kemper could be that guy. He does a shutout today. Mm-hmm. Not tonight.
Does a shutout?
Does a shutout.
Does a shutout?
Look, I'm a big hockey guy. You know how those goalies do.
Do one of those no-goal thingy-majiggers.
It's like Madison Bumgarner. I was hoping he would do a no-hitter, and then he didn't.
Do a no-hitter.
Right.
I tell you what, the Diamondbacks do need somebody to do a home run.
Yeah, they do a home run. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
And if you had the New York Rangers in your first team out of the bubble pool, congratulations, you're a winner. They got swept.
Oh, I didn't even know they were done already.
Yeah, Carolina? One team out. Carolina swept them.
I don't know if you saw. It was a really, really cool thing. The Panthers got together before, I think, the bubble started, and unbeknownst to the players, the organization had video messages from all their family members. And so they got together in a room, and they played them all, and apparently it was a really emotional, cool scene. Guys breaking down, guys missing their families.
Sport of hockey does a lot of cool stuff like that. Like, you know, I think pretty much every team is doing the fathers and mothers road trips with the team. I know the Coyotes have done that for years. That's such a cool thing. I don't know if any other sports teams in other leagues have those same kind of moments. If they do, they don't make a big deal out of it, you know?
No, I think you're right. Yeah, the culture, the road to the NHL is so different in terms of what it's like for hockey players.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, how many basketball players have gone and lived with other families, like at academies? You know what I mean? It's very odd.
15?
Yeah, right.
Well, even remember when Sidney Crosby got into as the number one pick and the, you know, one of the most.
Did you say Cindy or Sidney?
Not Cindy Crosby.
Okay. All right.
Not Cindy Crawford.
Come on, do a Sidney.
Because he could do a Stanley Cup, too.
Yeah.
He might do a shutout.
Sidney Crosby. Came into the league as one of the most hyped hockey players to come in the league in a long time.
He did.
Lived with Mario Lemieux in his house
for
several years, I think.
That's right. Yeah. Remember, who was...
The reality show.
Yeah. Remember Danny Briere came to the Coyotes?
Yeah.
Looked like he was 14 years of age.
I don't even think he looked that old.
I know.
He's in his 40s now, and he still looks like he's about 12.
Daniel Briere was 4 years into his Coyotes career. All right, he had already had a great season. He had a delivery guy ring his doorbell, and the guy said, "Is your dad home?" That actually happened to Daniel Briere. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, that's funny. Coming up next, big win for the Suns. Can they keep it up? We'll talk with Suns legend and broadcaster Tom Chambers next. It's Bickley and Marotta on this Wednesday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.